Imagine what it was like for Moses at age 120 to climb to the top of Mount Nebo. From this summit, he could see the promised land in the distance, but he would never step foot into Canaan with the people he loved. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll recreates those poignant moments when Moses stepped down from leadership. It was a mixed bag of regret, nostalgia, and reward, not only for Moses, but for the people who loved him. As part of his biographical study of Moses, Chuck titled today's message, Obituary of a Hero.
This afternoon, for about an hour and a half, my son and I were looking at tombstones. I was giving final thoughts to the 34th chapter of Deuteronomy, and I couldn't get into the spirit of it completely, so I walked through the den. He was laying on the floor, resting, and I said, I'm going to go look at tombstones. And he said, can I go with you? And I said, yes, that'll be fine. So we got in the car and drove out to a nearby cemetery and walked around for about an hour and a half. Ever done that? It sounds ghoulish to start with, but it is quite an education to see what is written on tombstones. It really is, seriously. There's a tombstone over here in Loma Vista that says, I want to get it just right, something like, you can't win, then a name. That tells you something, doesn't it? Really? There's one that says, our darling son, May 3rd, 1940, to May 7, 1940. Says something, doesn't it? There are perhaps thousands, but millions of comments you will find written on tombstones. That is one of my favorite pastimes when I visit historic cities, is to visit historic cemeteries. See what was written about people. But you know what? I have never seen any difference in any tombstone when it comes to time. It's always represented by a little small dash. And that's all. Right? They could have lived to be 80, 90. But all of life, when it comes to a tombstone, is wrapped up in one little slash. That's life. It's gone. You see, when you study a man as great as Moses, and then you bury him, at the end of the study, and you look back on where you've been, all of a sudden you come down to some very real basics. And we do that this evening. There's not a lot of flair. There's nothing sensational. There's not a whole lot of depth in the burial. He just dies. But God, though he hides the burial place, he's the only one God buried in all the Bible. You know that? The only man God ever buried personally was Moses, and he hid the tomb. But he let us read the obituary. He allowed us to read the tombstones to see what it says in his estimate of Moses. And it's upon that subject we want to think this evening. I suppose I began to think seriously about death when my dad passed out in the middle service last Sunday morning here in this place. And as most of you know, was hospitalized. And things have gone from bad to worse. There, first of all, was a heart attack, and then that led to several strokes, we think. The paralysis has led to difficulty in swallowing, so he can't get that together. The muscles of the esophagus aren't working right. And so he gags a lot. And as a result of a couple of complications, a virus set in, which led to a fever. And now he has pneumonia. We just found out today. And And I visit him. I sat there Wednesday night at 10:30 in the dim-lit room of a hospital, and I watched white-clad nurses passing by, rapidly doing their thing, and I looked at a man dying on a bed. Lucille and I were there this afternoon, and we looked again at a man without teeth, without conscious awareness. He's that hollow look in his eye, that distant. And the man I once held and touched and felt is dying. He's leaving. Just a dash. He'll be gone. And in the movement of all of that and that quiet trip to the tombstones, I've suddenly begun to feel something of the scene that happened up on Mount Pisgah where Moses died. Kind of grips you down deep. It's kind of quiet. I think it's a tragedy to go to a passage of Scripture as though you're going to a lesson to complete. There's an atmosphere. God's book is a book of life. And except for his son, he never lingers over death. I can't count on one hand the number of lengthy obituaries. They just die. And then life, it's a whole new dimension starts. But now we have a chapter on death of Moses, the death of Moses, and it's worth some time. It's worth it to look over his tombstone and see what God has said. Let's do that. Chapter 34 of Deuteronomy wraps it up. It begins with something about the place and the purpose. Beginning at verse 1, "Now Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah." The Encyclopedia Britannica says that its summit, it's 4,500 feet. That's almost a mile. There are not too many 120-year-old men who can walk up a mountain, almost a mile high, and live to tell the story. And Moses could. He did it. In case you wonder what condition he was in, just think about that. When's the last time you went up a mountain? Probably it's been some while. I mean, since you walked. Maybe never. I've only done it twice. I never planned to do it again for the rest of my life, but I did it twice. Man, I was huffing and puffing and blowing the house down all the way up that crazy thing, and it wasn't even 2,000 feet. I felt like a martyr. And here was Moses, 4,500 feet, and he has a great time when he gets up there. You don't find any self-pity in Moses. He knows he's going to die. God's already told him. He's already placed a man in his spot, Joshua, and it's the last time. And the believer has no reason to fear or run panic-stricken when it comes to dying. That's what it's all about. You're not really ready to live until you're ready to die. And when you're ready to die, hang it. Let's do it. See? Now, there's a lot of feeling, I realize, but in the final analysis, wow, that opens up a whole new vista that just boggles the mind. It's a whole new dimension, and Moses was looking forward to it. We really want to hang on to the dying, don't we? We really do. There's a piece written that says, "What's wrong with me, Lord? Week after week, I beg you to take her. In agony, I wept and waited while she grappled with insidious pain. I watched the gradual decline of her once strong and lovely body. I saw her lines of weariness, her constant discomfort. I listened to her broken sobs as she pleaded for release. I felt the pressure of her trembling fingers when the gripping pain intensified. I sensed her growing weakness, her deep depression. Through sleepless nights, I listened to her labored breathing. In the darkness, I cried to you. Over and over, I cried. Then yesterday morning, Lord, at the first streak of dawn, you answered my prayer. Gently you took her to yourself. You rewarded her with fullness of joy. Thank you, Lord. And even while I thank you, I wish I could have kept her just one more day. What's wrong with me, Lord? I want to keep Moses. You ever want to keep a loved one? Sure. That's part of the fleshing out of us. That's deep within us. To keep, not give. Hold on to, not share. I want to hold Moses. I want it to linger. But God says, no longer. He's mine. And so he takes him up to the mountain. And while he's up on that mountain, he gives him a view the likes of which you and I cannot imagine. Because we will never see it as Moses saw it, the promised land. That virgin soil that never soiled the sandals of Israel. And Moses looked out over that land. And if I read this geography right, verse 1, the Lord showed him all the land. Gilead as far as Dan, Naphtali, Ephraim, Manasseh, the land of Judah, the western sea, and he goes all the way around. In fact, if you study it, he starts by looking north. And then he turns around and he looks west. And then he looks further and he goes south. Then he turns and he goes east. He's turning around in a circle like a beacon. And he's looking all around that great scene down the valley, looking over into Jericho. It's a moving passage, even in the geography of it. And Moses is just sort of clucking his tongue. Man, look at that. Wow, look at that. Wow, look at that. You know, however they said that in Hebrew. No, look at that. And then when it was all wrapped up, God says, okay, Moses, come on home. You see that fourth verse? Then the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that I will give it to your descendants. Oh, God is so faithful. I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. I've let you see it, but you can't stand on it. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died. D-I-E-D. Hero or not, that's the way you pass on. You die. He died according to the word of the Lord. Two things stand out when I think of the grave. First, the aloneness of death. Not the loneliness. There's a difference. Loneliness suggests the feeling of longing, reaching in vain for someone else. Aloneness means nobody else goes along. That's what I see here. You never take a companion with you when you travel through death. You go all alone. Talmud says, man is born with his fist clenched, but he dies with his hands open. You don't take it with you. It all stays back. And his life was his legacy. He died right there. He died all alone. You know, we are strangers to being alone, honestly. We have a telephone. We have a car. We have contact points with friends, rendezvous places to meet. It's a sign of our times to be gregarious. A writer by the name of Ruth Harms Calkin puts together an interesting word. You know, Lord, how I serve you with great emotional fervor in the limelight. You know how eagerly I speak for you at a women's club. You know how I effervesce when I promote a fellowship group. You know my genuine enthusiasm at a Bible study. But how would I react, I wonder, if you pointed to a basin of water and asked me to wash the calloused feet of a bent and wrinkled old woman? Day after day, month after month, in a room where nobody saw and nobody knew. That's different, isn't it? You see, everything is great if I don't have to be alone. Perhaps that's the thing that makes death so fearful. Unfortunately, that may very well be. We are so seldom alone. Now, Moses is alone, and I notice, secondly, there is a security in this death. He died according to the word of the Lord, exactly as God arranged it. I am absolutely comfortable with the feeling that God knows our times, and I am equally comfortable with the feeling that God knows the end of our times. And therefore, I do not live in fear when I get on an airplane. I do not fear when I take a trip across the basin to go up to Van Nuys or onto the valley or down to San Diego. I know that in God's plan, and He's pleased that I not be presumptuous in this, He has arranged by His word the day of my death. Now, I think that some of you have a ways to go, and I just lay this on you just as a thought, and it's a little heavy for some. Some of you have a ways to go in accepting that thought. And therefore, you quite probably are given to fear when you think of death. Moses, the servant of, I put these two thoughts together, verse 5. The servant of the Lord, the word of the Lord. Look at them together. They're almost in just juxtaposition. They're just near enough to be taken as sort of a rhythmic movement. The servant of the Lord, according to the word of the Lord, died. They fit together. So there's security in this death. Both of those thoughts are strange to us. Aloneness and security at a time of death. Let me encourage you this evening, and I know that there are not many of the, what I would call, really older people here this evening in this service, but let me say to you to work, beginning tonight, from now on conquering this whole matter of being afraid to die, even being afraid to have your loved ones die. Whether by life or by death, the great apostle said, "May I magnify Jesus Christ." Many of us magnify Him in our lives, but when it comes time to die, that's another story. Now, Moses died securely. So there's a report and a record. It follows. Verses 7 through 12 is sort of mixed together. First, he gives us the age. Verse 7. Although Moses was 120 years old, a century and a quarter, 12 decades. Doesn't that encourage you? 120. There are not many of those left, are there? And you know what? All of his education, all of his fame, all of his fortune, all of his experience, all the things that we would normally hold on to, just went right on with him. Death has a way of putting things in proper perspective. That's one of the things I love about the ministry. No 2 days are ever the same, and I often traffic in eternal paths. Birth, death, deep sickness, tragedies. We would call them tragedies. At the cutting edge of life is where I live. Dealing with the dead is just as familiar to the man of God, the pastor, the minister, as making the final sale is to your salesman, or as fixing a meal is to you who are homemakers, or filling out a form is to a file clerk. Now, we could run the risk of becoming calloused and doing it as a business. But I say, as I read this passage, I don't remember ever burying anyone 120 years young, ever. I left the hospital late one night this past week and turned and spoke a word of appreciation to the nurse who's been so kind to my dad. in his unconscious state, especially. She has been very kind, even when he didn't know she was there. And I said, well, you know, he's lived 83 great years. And she said, yes, there are not too many who die the age of Moses. And she didn't have any idea where I'd be this particular Sunday. And I looked at her and I said, that's right. I walked on by. I thought, that's right. I've never buried anybody over 100 years old. There are not too many of them left. Now, you would think, well, 120. Man, he must have really been crippled up. Look at the verse, verse 7. His eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. Wow. That's the way to live, huh? 120 and you don't need glasses. 120 and you don't need crutches. He's just moving on, just like Caleb. You know, our problem is we get old before we're old. We start living like we're old before we're old. It's a crime. Guy get a PhD and he feels like he's over the hill because he's worked on it for, you know, a number of years. Or you get into a business and you crest out. You come to that place where it's sort of, you know, it's zinging along for you. You begin to feel old. Longfellow wrote, "It is too late. Ah, nothing is too late." Cato learned Greek at 80. Sophocles wrote his grand Oedipus. And Simonides bore off the prize of verse from his peers when each had numbered more than 80 years. And Theophrastus, at 80, had begun his Characters of Men. Chaucer, at Woodstock, with his Nightingales, at 60, wrote the Canterbury Tales. Goethe, at Weimar, toiling to the last, completed Faust when 80 years were past. What then? Shall we sit idly down and say, the night has come? It is no longer day. Why, age is opportunity no less than youth itself, though in another dress. And as the evening twilight fades away, the sky is filled with stars invisible by day. You're just as old as you want to be. I think it is a shame that we do not live as Moses lived. Jim Elliot said, wherever you are, be all there. Live to the hilt every situation you believe to be the will of God. You're a student, live it up. You're in business, have at it. Lose your job, have at it. Really be unemployed. Have a baby, enjoy it. Lose the child, to life or marriage or on to business, let them go. Live on. What a way to live. What's the alternative? It's not a lot, is there? And I meet them every day that have chosen the alternative. And their eye is dim and their vigor is abated. And I think more important than even the physical is the spiritual. Verse 10, since then, listen to this obituary. God wrote it on his tombstone. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. When Joshua came, in order for him to get the direction from God, he had to go to the high priest. But during the days of Moses, when he got a hold of God's direction, it was an eyeball-to-eyeball contact with the living Lord. Man. And in that life of 120 years, it was a face-to-face life.
Well, you can tell from the title of today's message that we're coming near the conclusion of Chuck Swindoll's biographical study on Moses. He titled this presentation, delivered back in 1976, Obituary of a Hero. This classic teaching series has timeless application for life in 2025, and Insight for Living has preserved this study on audio CD. To purchase the complete collection of 20 sermons, just ask for the audio series called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication, when you call us at 800-772-8888. Did you know that every message in the Moses series is paired with a Searching the Scriptures Bible study? This is an exclusive spiral-bound workbook prepared by Insight for Living. All 20 of Chuck's sermons in this series are included, so you can dig into the book of Exodus on your own. You can find these two resources, the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook and the audio CDs for Chuck's study on Moses, by going to insight.org/store. It's possible you've been following Chuck's teaching for several decades. In the early days, maybe you had little financial margin because of the demands of raising a young family. During that season, it was the generous giving from other listeners that made it possible for you to hear Chuck's teaching. Today, you're likely in a stronger position. If that's the case, let me encourage you to step forward and become one of our monthly companions. January is the perfect time to start a new discipline of generosity. By giving a monthly donation in the amount of your choice, you can do for someone else what others did for you back in the early days. Becoming a monthly companion means you'll have a ministry all your own. Here's the number to call, 800-772-8888. And you can sign up at insight.org/monthly companion. To send a one-time check in the mail, write to us at Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Or you can give online at insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Moses, a man of selfless dedication, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Obituary of a Hero, was copyrighted in 1976, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024. And the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.